turning again to the Gospel according to John. If you would turn there, this passage that we read this morning, John chapter 13. There is a story here, but at the heart of this story, I believe, is the words of Jesus in verse 8. If I do not wash you, you have no part with me. We come to chapter 13 of this gospel record. Back in halfway through chapter 12, we read that Jesus spoke and then hid himself. He departed and hid himself from the crowds. The crowds who had not long before welcomed him into the city. That's in chapter 12, where Jesus hid himself from the crowds. He was no longer going to mix with the crowds. But John still has 9 chapters to tell us concerning Jesus. There are a lot of people who write about the gospel, and they spot a strong difference, and they give a label. They say chapters 1 through to 12, you might call the book of signs. And then from chapter 13 through to the end, is called the Book of Glory. The reason for that is that this transition, which I'm going to mention a little more about in a moment, but the transition is reflected back in chapter 12 and verse 23. The hour has come. This was the moment, this was the mark, a mark of distinction, but the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. And so that glorifying of the Son of Man is unfolding from here on. He hides himself from the crowds. That glory that they wanted to give him is not the path that he takes. This instead is the path to glory from chapter 13 and following. But we also see the difference quite a marked difference from chapter 12 to 13, where Jesus had been with the crowds. He'd been going around, mixing around a whole lot and healing so many people and so on. From chapter 13 onwards, a most noticeable difference is that it's not that he hides himself completely from all men, but just from the crowds, but he has to give time to those who did believe in him, his disciples. That's by definition. Disciple is one who follows. And they followed because they believed his word. So many heard him. Chapters 1 to 12. They saw what he did. They heard what he taught concerning what he did. And through all of that, the call was, will you believe? What matters is, do you believe in me? Jesus said. So often, all these people heard it. How many did believe? We considered before, in regard to that hiding himself in chapter 12, how many people heard all these things, and they'd heard them for a number of years, and perhaps they thought, as those around Paul in Athens, well, we'll hear him a bit more again tomorrow about this. We're not ready yet to throw in our lot with this fellow. We'll hear him again tomorrow. But tomorrow didn't come. The next day, he did not appear as before. That actually reminds me of Samson, who thought that he would destroy the enemy as before. But he didn't know that the Spirit had left him, because he had hardened himself against the Spirit repeatedly, just as these people did. And Samson was ruined by the Philistines. How many were ruined? How many continued in their judgment and condemnation because they did not believe in the Son whom God had sent? So Jesus did not appear to these people. He appeared, though. He did appear, but only to those who had believed, to the disciples. And it's what he says to these men that we now turn to listen to. It's what he did with them that we turn to watch. As we do so, remember too that he's speaking to them on the eve of his death. They didn't know that. They should have done. The other Gospels tell us that he spoke about this very forcibly, very directly and simply three times leading up to this point. They didn't really seem to understand that. But he knew that he would soon die. And this is what he has to say to them when he is about to die. That's an important point in anybody's life. He was not going to die helplessly. He was going to die by giving himself. He knew it was coming. This was the hour. In the light of that, what does he see fit to pass on to these few who continue to support him? And why might he have said and done what he said and did? I think in this short section to begin with, this is only a small part of this whole evening that he had with them and the things that he taught them. But in this first short section, through to verse 11, I think the things we need to be especially aware of are the demonstrations that we have of his, I would call it, humbling love. Even amongst his disciples then, to also notice that continued refusal of his service to them among men, and then that great word of Jesus in the middle as our text, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Only made clean by Jesus' washing. So these three headings in particular: Jesus' humbling love, men refuse his service, but we are only clean by Jesus' washing. Jesus' humbling love, first of all. I suggest, although love is spoken of a couple of times, even in verse 1, I suggest that the driving force behind what Jesus does now is not called love. It's not the love that is spoken of there. Love is outlined, and it then is seen in what he does. But we are told something about what directs his behavior. What is the driving force? What drives that love that he has for those who are in the world, his own, whom he loved to the end? There is something even behind that that pushes it on. And it is, it seems, according to John, that it is because he knew in verse 1 that his hour had come that he should depart from this world to the Father. I believe that is where it is arising from. I said that this is not called love, but surely it is a matter of his greatest love, the love of his Father. It's that anticipation of going to return to his Father in a full way. He's never been apart from his Father, really, but in the fullness from which he had come, he's going back. It's almost like you might say, well, he knows that he's going to his Father, the Father whom he loves with an eternal love. What will he take to his Father? What will he have to present to his Father? And that's a common Bible picture of what he is going to offer to God the Father. And it's this that led him to do what he did, led him to speak what he spoke to his own people, as they're called here. These who had believed, but who still needed so much more to bring them on, to secure them, and to ensure that they would not be lost. We read later how stretched their loyalty was, how they ran when he was arrested, how Peter denied him. Their loyalty to him was stretched to the limit almost. And I think when we look on that, we must be so grateful that he spent this evening with them and taught them so much. This was his love for them to the end. He had so much to pour out, to pour into them, that might just hold them when their faith was tested. And that love is seen, first of all, in the story of Jesus washing his disciples' feet. Remember as we read that he was well aware of two things which those around him would not have been aware of. The first, we are told, is in verse 2. He was aware. He knew long before this that someone, one of these, would betray him. But he did know. Which we're told down in verse 11, he knew who would betray him. But he knew that someone of these 12 would betray him, his inner circle. But there's a great contrast that John presents us with. Along with the fact, the knowledge that he had of being, that he would soon be betrayed. If you knew that of someone, it would be devastating. But along with that, he knew, secondly, that the Father had given all things into his hands. It might not look like it, but he knew, his certain knowledge, that everything was in his hands, along with that where he had come from and where he was going. This was great confidence that he could have through everything that was still to unfold. And it's in the light of this that he then goes out and he washes these disciples' feet. He knew that one of them would betray him, but he also knew that he was going to God. That's where he had come from. He was the one of great glory. This is what Paul deals with in Philippians chapter 2, where he tells us that he was the eternal Son, he had the glory of God, but he humbled himself to become like one of us. He knew that what he was about to do would not shake anything in his Father's purpose. It would not undermine any of that. For all that glory that he knew he was soon to go to, here we see him setting aside his honor and serving as a slave. Because that's who would normally have done this job. Not just any old person, not even the host. It would be the slave of the host whose task it was to wash these dirty feet. What Jesus did here was a picture of a greater work. It's a parable in action of the greater work that he was soon to do, fulfilling his love for his own to the end. Philippians 2, Paul says, he took the form of a servant. It was that overlay the glory that he had, hid that glory. It was all hidden from these people. And he hides it further still. He wasn't just a man among them. He became a slave among them. There were many, apart from these 12, who despised and rejected him. Because that's what he looked like, just a slave or a humble traveler. Yes, there were many who were interested, but they still rejected him. But he still continues while he is within this inner circle. He continues and he accentuates, he aggravates the problem as he comes across as a slave, a servant. And that is so important as a demonstration of his love, the extent that he humbled himself. This was a feast which was most probably taken reclining. We know, many of us know, that that's often the way that feasts were taken in those days. They would recline around the table. A servant wouldn't be able to do that. But here, this guest, who had arranged for the feast to be laid out. He rises from that honored position. He lays aside his outer garments. And he serves. Serves those. Those who believed in him. A picture again of the way that he came from glory He came from glory. He took off, as it were, that glory. He laid it aside for a time. It's Jesus who's come before men, come among men. He took up all the necessary pieces to wash the disciples' feet. Son of Man, Mark tells us, Jesus told the disciples, the Son of Man came not to serve, not to be served rather, but to serve. That's what he's demonstrating here once more. There were 13 men around that table eating the Passover feast. None of them felt that it was in their place to wash anybody's feet, not even their master. Was there that discomfort among them? You know, what's the right etiquette in such and such a situation? How do you handle this social encounter? Were they unsettled about it? Perhaps they were. Jesus is the one who takes the matter in hand. His love was boundless. And that's the same love that he shows to you and to me today. I think we need to be careful. There are some places that, well, there are in fact some gatherings which almost stipulate that sometime in the year you must go out and wash people's feet, literally. And that's not necessarily the case. That's not the great point behind this. There's another, the following section has a lot more to say about that. But let's focus on what Jesus has done. How he came to those people as their servant. How does that apply for us today? Now we're in the UK today, this very day. There's just one for instance that I would offer to you. How God in Christ and his Spirit does what Jesus did there. He gets up, he lays off his glory, he comes and he appears as a servant, humbling himself because he loves you. I see it in his giving his word. It struck me quite a lot lately. He gives his word. He doesn't need to. He never needed to. He never needed to speak to us. But he has done it again and again. The prophets talked about it. And then Jesus came and we have this in front of us. And it should be enough. Once it should be enough. But it's not, is it? We still go out and get our lives dirty and he comes and his word comes. And it comes again to us, and it comes again to us, and it comes again to us. That's God coming again and again as your servant to give you hope, to give you life, to give you a part in him, with him. It's one for instance. When a queen has something she wishes to say to you, apart from a birthday card on your 100th birthday, she will summon you to her. God comes to you and speaks to you. He's not only doesn't send someone else with the message. Yes, he sends preachers and so on, but he actually comes. He says he comes. His own spirit comes to give the message. His own spirit is the messenger. And he says to you again today, will you receive me? And will you receive the washing that I am prepared to do? As well as humbling himself in his love for his people, Jesus' love is humbling for those who receive it. It's meant to be that way. From verse 12 onwards deals with that. But for now, let's see what that meant in this particular moment. This particular episode. And I bring this under the heading of the way that men refuse this service. We are people, we are human beings, just like Peter and those other 11 around him. Put yourself in that situation where you've been following this master and adoring this master. He's an exceptional person and he's received you into his circle. And here he has this moment drawn aside from the crowds. These people didn't know what was going to happen. Would he go out among them again? Would he set himself up as their leader and king and great deliverer? They didn't know, but here, after all of these great events of this week, here we are, just us 12 around this man. And now he gets up and he washes my feet. He's just washed John's feet. He's just washed Andrew's feet. He's just washed Bartholomew's feet. Now Peter says, Lord, you're not going to wash my feet. This is just too much. At least Peter spoke. It's more often than not in these Gospels, I think Peter says the words that were going through everybody else's minds. Imagine that scene. John, we learn elsewhere that he was right beside Jesus at this feast. Perhaps John was the first one to have his feet washed. That young man, the youngest of them probably, what went through his mind? What was on his face as he looked down the length of his body and saw Jesus washing his feet? What was on the faces of the others across the table as they saw this? Were they puzzled? Were they alarmed? Were they a bit put out, like Peter seems to have been? Did John turn red with embarrassment? This isn't the way things should be. Oh, if only I had done that. It was niggling at me since we came in, since we lay down and we realized there were no servants. Maybe I should have done it. All these strange feelings, perhaps, that were going through their minds. How can you wiggle out of it? What should they do? Comes to Peter, Simon Peter, and Peter said, Lord, are you washing my feet? Are you really going to do this? Jesus doesn't seem to answer him very much. He gives him a general, you won't understand now, but you will know. You will understand. But still Peter persists and he goes very firmly, you will never wash my feet. This love of Jesus, the humbling love, the way that Jesus humbled himself, it was in one sense a humbling thing for Peter. It was an embarrassment to him. He's my master. I won't have it. Peter hasn't quite got as far as jumping up to take over. What's going on here? This Jesus, whom the nation has been praising, down at Peter's feet, washing off the dirt. That humbling effect on Peter was extremely uncomfortable. And he resists it. He wants to push this service away. He wasn't going to have that kind of relationship with his master. Let's keep things in order. Here, Peter is his right-hand man, after all. This very simple act that was common to most homes then, but done by the lowest person. When Jesus did it, it dug deep, at least into Peter's heart. Perhaps Peter looked around, he was looking around desperately. Why didn't somebody arrange a servant to do this? And then perhaps he remembered it was Jesus who made the arrangements. Why don't we just put up with dirty feet? Let's keep things businesslike. Let's keep things practical. Jesus doesn't need to do this. And Jesus was right, wasn't he, that Peter didn't understand in verse 7. If Peter had understood, he would have understood another thing that is common to man, that men do not want to be dependent on God, on Jesus, for everything, even this. Isn't there something I can do? Why can't I get somebody else to do it? Peter was receiving a gift out of the love of his master. And it's one of the very hardest things for a man or woman to do, to receive a gift and have nothing to give in return. A child will do it. That's how you enter the kingdom. But when we get used to etiquettes and conform to society, to receive just a sheer gift of grace and mercy, it's so hard. I think that's what's reflected in what happens with Peter. It's too humbling. It brings us down too low. It hurts the pride of man. And so men continue to refuse when Jesus serves. And even this great service, but the Lord would take them on, he would seek to give them further understanding. And he does that by his second, his second part to his answer to Peter. Our text, verse 8, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. That means you can only be clean by Jesus himself doing the washing. It's not simply if you are not washed, you have no part with me, but if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. Peter is fumbling along. He tries to rectify the matter when he hears that and he bursts out, well, don't just do my feet, do everything, do the main things, my head and my hands, symbols of mind and action as well. When he hears that he needs to have this washing if he's still to be part with Jesus, that at least there is something of Peter's love for his master. It has been growing. It keeps him near enough to know that he must not be cut apart from Jesus. Of course, Peter wants more than anybody else, but it's a response of a newfound need. And that's a reminder to us as well that we do all have such a need ourselves for this washing. But it's not just this washing of the feet. It's not just a washing of water. This is a symbol, as I've suggested already, a symbol of something much, much greater. Just that act of washing in that room was not in itself a matter of having a part with Jesus. If these men would receive this service from Jesus, however puzzled they may still have been, it would keep them with him, with all that was to flow from that. If they did not now refuse this washing, they would receive, because they remained with him, they would receive the greater cleansing that was to follow by his death that was just around the corner. It was believing in him even in this puzzling event. It was believing in this that his word is true, that he will supply their need. It was this that would gain them the benefit of all that Jesus was, all that Jesus is. The real contrast is no longer between Peter and the others, but there is another man of these 13 whom Jesus knew had not received him. And again, put yourself in that room that night. It would appear that Jesus washed the feet of 12 men. But one of them was not clean. He was missing what Jesus spoke about in verse 10, which is perhaps a little bit of a puzzling expression still. But it's about an inner washing, an inner cleansing. But not all of you are clean, he said. For he knew who would betray him. One of those 12. There was a man in that room, Judas Iscariot, we learn in verse 2. When his feet were washed, or when he saw the other feet being washed, what was the look on his face? Was he starting to show how he despised Jesus? How he hated what Jesus was all going on about? The devil had been at work in him. The devil was already working in the heart of Judas Iscariot to betray him. He had his feet washed, but his heart was cold and hard to this great love of Jesus. He was not clean because of the state of his heart. That's the greater thing that Jesus is pointing to. Peter did respond, "Lord, I need you. Whatever washing you will do, I need it." Judas received that washing, but his heart was not clean. Our time has gone for this morning. There was a man who refused. He had been brought into that inner circle. It appeared as though he had believed, but he here refuses. He turns against all that Jesus is about. Is there any alternative? Only if I wash you will you have a part with me. There's no alternative to this way if you are to have a part with Jesus. There is no other way to obtain what he is and what he gives. Ultimately here, he's not simply talking about that little episode amongst 13 men. He's pointing towards the need for the full cleansing of heart. And that is to be found no differently from this one. It's to be gained from him in the same way that this foot washing was to be received by Peter and his friends. Peter did not trust Jesus, first of all, that Jesus had it right. He refused. But when Jesus said this, Peter responded. He did trust. He did believe. It keeps coming back to that. Simply to receive. Peter could do nothing. He wanted to, but he couldn't. He had to be washed by Jesus. And that is the only way to find Jesus and through Jesus to come to the Father. This is something that Jesus further goes on to say to them. John 14 is well known to many that he is the way. No one comes to the Father except through him. But if you're to have him, you must have his washing. His work to cleanse you. You must receive what he gives. His service. Yes, the Lord of heaven and earth. But that humbling love, as he humbled himself, as he would humble us, repeatedly the Bible also says, he gives grace to the humble, but resists the proud. Receive his love with an open hand. Know that you can return nothing. There is no other way to the Father of Jesus than through the Son of the Father, who is Jesus. All things are in his hands. That's why he does it, to give you a part with him. We read at the beginning of the service, Paul's recognition. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ. This is to the praise of the glory of his grace, by which he made us accepted in the Beloved. And this Beloved comes to you and to me repeatedly, even when you have believed, with his gift. Receive it. Nothing more is needed. Nothing else will be enough. If I do not wash you, you have no part with me. May he set that firmly in our hearts, each one. May he set his blessing on his word among us today and his service. Let us pray together.